This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. This week we are going to be spending at spring training. I believe we're scheduled to talk to the skipper. Scott Servais, I think, is going to be joining us tomorrow. We heard from Justice Sheffield a little bit earlier, but a lot of the conversation over the past week has remained about Russell Wilson because there was another turn in it. And about a half hour ago, Paul, we kind of got to the question of who's right and who's wrong. And that's not in a sense of being wrong to speak up or you shouldn't say anything, but the question of who's seeing this situation most accurately. Is Russ and his side, for lack of a better term, the one that's most clear-eyed in this and looking at it and saying, hey, you've got a quarterback here who is one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the league, who doesn't get anywhere near the kind of passing opportunities that those other guys get, and who, quite frankly, this franchise was 7-9 in the 2 years before he got here and has had a winning record every year since, and because you're not giving him the opportunities or the say-so or protecting him as much as other franchise quarterbacks are, you're not winning as much as you could be. Or is it the team that looks at it and says, hey, we've had 9 straight winning seasons here with him. We've gone to the Super Bowl twice. We've won one of them. We've actually rebuilt the team around him after having been defined by a dominant defense early on. Which one is right? And I mean that strictly in an accurate. Who's seeing this most accurately? Is it Russ and feeling he's unprotected and they haven't done right by him? Or is it the Seahawks who said, like, look, we've done pretty well overall and we could always do better, but it's not like you're neglected here or have been denied something.
Russell's court is not looking at this blindfolded. There are some elements of what they're bringing up that are right, but top to bottom, the Seahawks have way more facts backing them up right now. And if this is a matter of who's right and who's wrong, I would lean with the Seahawks. I think that their own success has made them, I don't know, they've fallen prey to it at this point with the way that Russ is making this argument. I mean, Russ looked at the Super Bowl, looked at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and saw a team that did whatever Tom Brady asked. That part is erroneous. Tom Brady joined a team that had been built by failure. That was a team that was built with top 10 picks over and over again. And he looked at the situation, and I think is mischaracterizing it, and it's almost as if he's holding the Seahawks' success against them because they have not gotten that true blue-chip talent. But I do understand, too, why Russ saying that he wants superstars actually does have a point when he said that last offseason. I mean, yeah, you have Jamal Adams. It seems like DK Metcalf is turning into one. Bobby Wagner is still one. But do you have enough compared to the best teams in the league? Right now, no. That's the answer.
From the 216 text, I want to read some of these from the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Danny is wrong. The Seahawks with Pete had not had a winning season until Russell Wilson walked in the door. Fact. Hashtag Team Russ. From the 206, Russell Wilson is the most right, only because so much outside narrative has been added to this story. I'm willing to bet the entire team management, Mark Rogers, are just sitting back and saying, did we do that? A la Urkel. From the 206, when it comes to the O-line, Russell Wilson is right. How do you not focus on protecting a top five quarterback? Sure, the Seahawks have had winning seasons, but what good is a winning season if you don't get back to the Super Bowl? The 503, I think, echoes what most of us feel overall, which is it doesn't matter who is right. Russell Wilson is a superstar quarterback, and he is much easier to get along with than Brady or Rodgers. Hook Bill Belichick up to a lie detector and ask him if he regrets how he dealt with Brady. Jody Allen needs to tell Pete, give him what he wants, or adios, amigo.
The part about Russ being easier to get along with than Brady, I don't buy that for a second. I don't buy that at all. And also, I think that there has to be some level of trust there, and there's no denying that Brady trusted Belichick and Belichick trusted Brady. Now, did the trust also carry along with it some feelings of resentment towards the end, perhaps? Yeah, absolutely. That's what happens. But where's the trust between Russ and Pete? And does there need to be trust at the foundation of a relationship between the quarterback and the coach? And look, Russ has, I think, a legitimate case to bring up and say, all right, well, this is why I don't necessarily trust Pete. But do you feel like Pete is the other way around? Like that Pete doesn't trust Russ? I don't get that impression.
And it doesn't, that isn't I can't reconcile that image with Pete being this intolerant, I don't want to hear from you, just go stand in the corner sort of voice with everything else that Pete has done in his time here. He's not a tyrant. He's not a control freak. This is not Tom Coughlin pre-2007. Like, that's not the kind of coach that he is. It's not the way that he manages a team. That question of whether they should play. Look, if Russ wants to play in a different offense, like, Russ is not required to sit there and take it. If he doesn't feel the protection is adequate and he doesn't feel that they pass often enough or it's built toward him, he doesn't have to sit there and take it. And if Seattle thinks he does, they're probably wrong, because he can end up, whether it's leaving 3 years from now, like, he's not obligated to take it.
But he signed the contract. I mean, he is obligated to sit there and take it. I mean, if he wants to win, if he's all about winning, then he's got to do what they tell him, right? I mean, is acting counter to what the coaches are putting out there, is that going to actually help you get closer to winning if you're pulling a Jonathan Moxon in Varsity Blues? I don't know about that.
But if that's the way, and you believe that's the way you're going to win, and that the only way it's going to happen, if he chooses to go that route, there's nothing that you can say to stop him from it, right? You're going to say, hey, you've got to honor your contract. Well, that's taking another step down toward the end where it ends up getting a divorce. Russ can choose and say that, hey, I want to do this my way. And eventually he is going to, whether it takes going to the end of his contract with three more seasons or whether it comes to a head a year from now. If Russ chooses that, he can go that direction.
Yes, he can. But would that serve him well? And honestly, does he really think that some of these boob teams that can't help but stumble over themselves that would do what he says, is that going to help him out? Is that really going to help him out? Like, say he goes to the Jets, who are born losers. He goes up there and he tells them how to go about doing things and they actually listen to him. What's going to happen if it fails?
The Jets aren't on his list, Paul. We know the four teams. Oh, yeah, he doesn't want to be traded. He doesn't want to be traded. But if that were to happen, there's four places that he would accept a deal to.
Okay, so the joke I made about the Chicago Bears is that, well, when Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, thank you very much, more behind the glass, when they get fired, Russ can assume power as head coach and GM and quarterback. So that's the only reason that Chicago makes sense, so that Russ can become like the dictator of a football team. But all the other situations, okay, if he goes to Dallas, I suppose he's going to have some autonomy. That offensive line's good. He goes to Vegas, there's no way John Gruden's going to be happy with him improvising, even if he is good at improvising. And then the other situation that was raised, what was the fourth one? Off the top of my head, I'm forgetting it. The New Orleans Saints, all right, cool, you're going to go there, but is everyone actually going to be along for the ride, seeing as they have a lot of trimming that they need to do this offseason? No, I don't necessarily know that.
But that's sort of, hey, he's going to have to make it. He will have made his bed and he'll have to lie in it. Like, if you're the Seahawks, you don't want to prove him wrong, right? Like, you want him to eventually understand that this is the best spot for him. It's why you get into a little bit of the complicated question of who is and has the most ground to stand on. How do you find a middle ground out of that? Or maybe this is just a certain amount of the off-season melodrama that you have to deal with Russell Wilson. Mike Florio, who runs the website Pro Football Talk, he interviewed Peter King. And I thought Peter did a pretty good job of outlining Seattle's perspective, which is, hey, you've got a quarterback that is one of the best in the league, guarantees you a shot at making the playoffs every year. And there's no way you're going to trade him unless you think you're getting a quarterback back who is a reasonable facsimile, who is 85 to 90% of what Russ is, and then you get other assets. Otherwise, you're not even having this conversation. But Florio's perspective and that question of what Russ wants, I think it's interesting to hear what Mike Florio said, because I think you're hearing sort of the perspective of Russell Wilson's camp and more specifically his agent, Mark Rogers. Here's Florio talking about wondering if the Seahawks really see Russ the same way Russ sees himself.
You know what? If the Seahawks don't view Russell Wilson the way that Russell Wilson views Russell Wilson, why in the hell don't they just throw the doors open and let some other team that would view him that way give more for Wilson than what the Seahawks apparently think he's worth?
Here's the problem with that. It's a bait and switch. If the Seahawks don't view Russell Wilson as Russell Wilson views himself, I think that objectively is true right now. I think that Russ has a different vision for how he wants to play and how the Seahawks would be best than how the Seahawks feel they'd be best with him playing quarterback. The question, why don't they just trade him? Well, because they don't have another quarterback that's good. This isn't a matter of them undervaluing Russ. This isn't a matter of them not thinking he's important. They thought he's so important that they made him the highest paid quarterback in the league when they re-signed him 2 years ago. They think he's so important that they think that there's only one or two other guys in the league that are playing at the level he is. This isn't a matter of them thinking, we don't think he's very good. It's, well, we actually think that we're putting him in the best system that we think for winning football. And that's somewhat constructed according to the way Pete Carroll thinks.
Is it just the best for the Seahawks? Is this not perhaps the Seahawks and the way that they view an offense that's best built for Russ? And honestly, doesn't that bear out based off of what we saw in 2019 versus what we saw in 2020? And again, Russ had very awesome seasons the last 2 years, even with some of the struggles down the stretch last year. He was so good at the first half.
You're right. He sets a career high in touchdown pass. We talk about the way that he quote-unquote struggled, and that's not – he had a good year.
The best version of Russ was the Russ that we saw in 19. I don't think there's any debating that. I mean, he did that with a team that was better at running the football. He did that with a DK Metcalf that was not the DK Metcalf we saw last year. He did that with a Tyler Lockett that was not healthy 100% of the year. His 19 was better than his last season. And how did they play in 19? How did they play? They played with a balanced system that helped set Russell up. Now, again, the offense kind of got figured out, and there's that intermediate stuff that needs to be figured out along the way. So I'm not acting like this is all perfect that was for him, but did they not just design an offense to help the Seahawks win? Isn't this an offense designed to help Russ maximize his success? I think so.
Do you think that the Seahawks have a better idea of what Russ should do to be successful on the team than Russ has the idea?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like everybody generally, when they have a view of themselves, they're going to be stubborn and ignore a lot of things, and they're going to need perhaps some guidance from somebody else. Now, I base that off of me and coaching that I've received over my time in this industry and some coaching that I'm trying to follow myself. I think that other people view you in a more honest way than you will ever view yourself. So, yeah.
How do you fix that then? Do you hit him over the head with a 2x4?
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of, because that's one of the ways to do it. Like, either you kind of coax someone into accepting the criticism.
Well, I don't think you're coaxing him again, right? I mean, can you coax him back into the crate, essentially? Like, if we're going to make a comparison to a little puppy, you know? Like, that's, how do you coax him back in, you know?
As someone who's dealing with...
That's why I made the comparison, with a little puppy in the background.
Getting a puppy, we have adopted a new dog, for people that don't know. Yeah, his name is Simba. He is a black Shar-Pei. He comes from Texas. Hearts and Bones Rescue is the group that we got him from. And he got a little feisty over the weekend when we were trying to get him to sleep in his crate and kind of threw some post-midnight barking fits. Sharon, my wife, is much better at waiting him out than I am. I get all angsty and want to give him attention and like, oh, is everything okay? Oh, my gosh, maybe I need to take him on a walk. You're just like, oh, let him cry it out. Let him cry it out. So maybe that's what you need to do with Russ.
Let him get it all out of his system.
Don't go into the living room right now. Do not go into the living room. Do not give him what he wants.
I do think that they have a pretty clear idea of what works for Russ, and Russ wants to go about it another way. And those situations that he's brought up where he doesn't want to be traded, but if he was traded, he would be traded here. Three of those teams have pretty good offensive lines, and maybe that's just his way of continuing to make the statement saying, hey, fix the offensive line this offseason. And I would just say, I mean, am I giving Pete Carroll too much credit by saying, let's just see what happens in March. Let's just see what happens in the draft. I mean, you really think that nothing's going to happen on the offensive line when they clearly lost that game to the Rams because of their offensive line?
Yeah, it's fortunate. It's fortunate that the Seahawks aren't spiteful, because if they were a spiteful organization, one of the ideas for trading Russ might be trading him to a team and in return getting their entire offensive line. Like, yes, you can have the quarterback, but you have to trade every single member of your offensive line. Like, that's just the starting component. And you're like, yeah, you get a fresh start. Good luck, sucker. Get ready to run. Mm-hmm. It's Danny Gallant. Let's go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
What's going on, Maura Dooley?
Maura!
Hey, guys.
Hey!
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I love hearing stories about your dog
Oh, he's a sweetheart. Absolute
he's
sweetheart.
Some trouble adjusting. He'll get there.
Hakuna Matata, Simba.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll try that with him.
Nice. First up, KJ Wright took home the Seattle Sports Star of the Year award.
Yeah, KJ. Good things happening to good people. Seattle Sports Star of the Year. It's a long-held tradition. I like to hear that.
He's going to get paid this offseason, don't you think? Someone, somewhere is going to be willing to give him the long-term contract that maybe the Seahawks would be a little less willing to give.
I love KJ. I don't think there's a market there for him this offseason.
Mm.
And I think that's a bummer because in this regard, Thomas Davis, I think, is a good comparison for who KJ Wright is as a player.
Yeah, I like that.
The caliber that he's played at, the longevity that he's had. And Thomas Davis cashed in later in his career when he left the Panthers. He went to the Chargers. He cashed in. I think because of the salary cap going down, I think KJ is one of the guys that's going to get squeezed this year. I think he'll be back in Seattle. If this had been 3 years ago, I think he would get much more money than he's going to end up getting this offseason.
Do you foresee owner collusion?
I don't think it's collusion. I don't. The salary cap has backtracked. Like, in baseball, when it happens, it's because they're artificially holding it down. This is a year ago. Teams had a plan for the salary cap to keep increasing. Like, the pandemic caused something to happen that nobody anticipated. So there is going to be a spending crunch, and the guys that are going to feel it most are going to be the veterans, are going to be the guys that are over 30 years old.
Yeah, and someone like KJ is probably not going to fit into most teams' long-term plans, and it would have to be, what, like a 3-4-year contract probably if you're going to feel like you're avoiding salary cap damage this year, and on top of that, I guess, enticing him compared to other deals he might get.
I think he's going to be back in Seattle. I think he's going to get a healthy salary. I don't think he's going to get as long-term of a contract as he could have or would have 3 years ago, or if the pandemic hadn't hit.
This is an interesting one, guys. Ravens linebacker Matthew Judon didn't like ESPN reporter Jameson Hensley's story that stated he turned down a $16 million contract with the Ravens, calling it untrue on Twitter. But he didn't stop there. He threatened to release photos of Hensley at a strip club and tell his wife that he's cheating on her. The tweet was later deleted.
He's bad at blackmail, right?
Yeah, you're not supposed to do it out in front of God and everybody. The other part is, who's going around taking pictures of people at strip clubs? Like, is that just common practice? It's happened to a couple NBA players now. Like, is that just commonplace now? Like, that seems to be, like, the... You're not supposed to snitch that way. And I say this as a guy that, like, look, I don't go to strip clubs and haven't... But it's weird that people end up throwing those sort of things around. And you also probably shouldn't be going, if you're a reporter, you probably shouldn't be going to strip clubs with players.
I assumed that maybe it was at, like, a Super Bowl event. I know that when we were in Atlanta, people pointed out Magic City like it was a tourist attraction. Like, our Uber driver was telling me and John Clayton about it, and I was very uncomfortable. But
it happens.
I guess it's a place that they tell people to check out.
No, it's part of, I mean, there is a culture and a social network around strip clubs, so that happens. I was just very much under the impression that the etiquette of such clubs were that there were no pictures ever to be taken.
I think these days, if you're around anyone, they're going to take a picture of you with a phone, and you always have to be self-aware enough to make sure that you're not the one that does it. I have friends that have, like, reels and reels of other friends while they've been, not at strip clubs, this is at, like, just out and about, like, going to a bar, and like, oh, wow, this person looks a little bit intoxicated. Here's a picture of this person that will randomly get thrown up at any point. Like, I have, like, 3 friends who are really good at this paparazzi thing, and they never release the pictures publicly, but they'll just every now and then they'll, like, just send it to you, like, hey, this was you once. Keeps you honest.
I will say this. That is a lame move by the player.
I agree.
And it's a lame move by the reporter if he was going to a strip club and his wife didn't know.
I think it's mostly the lame move. Like, why are you so mad about, like, contract negotiations getting public? Like, that, this is, of all the things to get mad about as a player, like, this seems like a really weird one to decide to try to blackmail a reporter over.
Honestly, I get that part.
I don't.
Because a lot of times it happens. You'll have, and this is speaking from experience as a reporter covering it, you'll have a team that will tell you something, that you don't attribute it. They don't expect it to be attributed. The Seahawks general manager said, blah, 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 we offered this. But it'll be the Seahawks offered, and it's just a statement of fact. And if it's wrong, like, I think I'd be mad as a player. I'd be like, who said that? That's not true. That's not what they offered to me. I think the most confusing thing in the world is to try to cover the back and forth between salary negotiations. It is pointless because you cannot get two people to agree on what constituted the offer. I've had a team and an agent in background conversations describe the same offer, and there's no way you would believe that they're talking about the same piece of paper that was exchanged.
Former Seahawks wide receiver Josh Gordon will return to football and be reunited with Browns teammate Johnny Manziel in the fan-controlled football league as a member of the FCF Zappers.
I want to see this. I want to see it.
You're going to watch it now?
Yeah, I'll watch it. Josh Gordon, he's played how many games over the past, like, 4 years?
Not many.
5 years?
Not many.
Like, is it even a dozen?
I think it's close to a dozen because I think with New England, he played a good amount of games.
Can he actually still, because he should mop dudes in this league. He should, if he's still an NFL caliber receiver, he should mop dudes in this league.
Yeah, I think he would too. I also found it interesting. There's like an Instagram guy by the name of Bob Menry who apparently owns that team. Like the Instagram account that I follow. He's like one of these people that he announces like with an announcer voice, but he cusses while he does it. So he like does play-by-play for sports, but he like does it with like a little sauce, on top of it. And I guess he owns that team, yeah.
He owns a team?
Yeah, I guess so.
Could we own a team?
Probably.
Richard Sherman and Quavo own one. Marshawn Lynch owns one with a WWE wrestler. Yeah.
That's a lot of money. But how does Instagram guy, does he,
I don't know.
Is he rich?
He has a ton of followers, so maybe. I don't know how you what's someone's actual wealth if they have a million plus Instagram followers? I don't know.
I more want to find out how we become the fans that get to call the plays, because we can just call a bunch of go routes for Josh
just
Gordon.
Just go routes.
Play.
You guys are much nicer than me. I'm dialing up hospital balls. That's what I want to see.
I don't know. Just to troll people watching this league, I might just, especially to troll Manziel, I would call for them to hammer the rock. Just hand the ball off up the middle every single play.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, come on.
I don't want Manziel to cook. No, I don't want Manziel.
I want 11-step drops from Manziel. I want him to wait on some deep go patterns. I want to see him get lit up.
Okay, yeah. That sounds like a fun watch. Yeah.
Sorry, guys, lost my place there. Ben Volen of the Boston Globe reports that Tom Brady's knee injury is relatively significant and needs more than just a little cleanup, as initially reported. When it comes out, all this does is build his legend even greater, a source told Volen.
What? Oh, because Tom has to run so much? Do you think he hurt his knee when he was drunk on his boat? Like, I have so many questions about this. Oh, this just burnishes this legend even more. He played on a gimpy leg. Come on.
That last part, too. Ben Volen likes to troll the people of Boston with the team that he covers. That last part is 100% to troll his readership.
I generally stay away from taking shots at other reporters. That's not true at all. I always take shots at other reporters. But because Ben criticized my wife before the Super Bowl.
What?
Because he made a... It was
trolling Volen?
Yeah, a little. It was innocuous. I don't think it was well-intentioned. But he asked... My wife was wearing a Seahawks... I believe it was a hat. Might have been a shirt, too. And he asked about her journalistic objectivity. As I was getting,
oh, he's the worst. He is the absolute worst. If he did that, what
yeah,
a loser!
Did.
Oh,
he
my
did.
God.
So I will say that there is a great listener that we have, a displaced Bostonian who refers to him as Mittens. Ben Volen is nicknamed Mittens by him. Do you know why?
No, but I want to hear.
Because
actually, I do know why. I just want to hear anyway.
It was a reference to some kid who was said to be so stupid that his mittens were pinned to his coat, otherwise he'd lose them. So they call him Mittens.
You know, I gotta say though, I you remember those mittens on a string when you were a little kid? Did you have that? I think that's a great invention.
I got mittens on a string when I started snowboarding. I now ski again, but when I got snowboarding and mittens on a string, and it was very, I felt like kind of wistful about it.
I'm stupid enough for this weekend when I go to Rado, I may need some mittens on a string, to be perfectly honest.
It is Danny and Gallant. We played a little bit of sound from Mike Florio, and if you listen real hard, you can actually hear Mark Rogers, Russell Wilson's agent's lips move, and as proof of that, we'll have what he said next. You can actually hear it happening. That's next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
From the 360, I believe Matthew Judon was making it up on purpose, like the reporter did. He said in another tweet that if the reporter made it up, so could he. You know what? That actually makes sense. In that regard, I think that was fighting fire with fire. You feel that someone made something up and said something untrue about you, doesn't walk it back, and you then say you're going to make up something about them. I respect that.
Yeah, but let's compare the scale of the two things. It's like responding to a mosquito bite with a bazooka.
Who would possibly shoot themselves with a bazooka over a mosquito bite?
I feel like what Matthew Judon's doing here. I feel like he's trying to shoot the mosquito which just bit him with a bazooka. And it's like, whoa. I mean, okay.
He got the details wrong. Wrong tool for the job, Paul.
Yes,
wrong
it is.
Tool for the
That's
job.
What I mean. I mean, he brought the dude's family into it. That rubs me the wrong way. Like, again, he might have gotten it wrong, but goodness gracious. Like, if you're going to come back with him like that and also just do poorly with your blackmail, like, too, like that was low-key extortion going on out there.
All right. We spent a great deal of time today wailing away at the pinata that is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. And I think it's useful in this way. In the same way, when we listen to Colin Cowherd, I'm like, I actually think that it's valuable to hear sort of the perspective that is being sent out by Team Russ. I think the same is true with Florio. I think that you very much hear the storyline that is being promoted, or the worldview that is being promoted by Team Russ, and by that we mean his agent, Mark Rogers. Here is Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, saying that he thinks Russell believes there's an inevitable separation coming with the Seahawks.
Because I think from Russell Wilson's perspective, it's inevitable. And he's not going to stop. And he's going to keep jostling. And he's going to say all the right things when it's time to show up and work. He's not going to hold out. He's not going to refuse to play for the Seahawks, but he's going to keep jostling, and he believes it's inevitable he'll be gone. He's under contract 3 more years. Once the Seahawks come to that conclusion, why not? Why not, if there's a great offer sitting on the table, why not?
Here would be my answer to that. What was the part you already said where he's going to keep showing up and playing? That he's going to keep doing his job, that he's not going to refuse? Okay, done.
Game over.
Fine. Yeah, thank you. You know what? Do whatever you want in the offseason. Say whatever you want, and we're going to have thick skin about it. And you can express if you're going to leave in 3 years, that will be your choice. That will be your choice. But until you say that I'm not going to show up or I want to be traded, we're not even looking at that. There's no situation. If you're Seattle's perspective, there's nothing that would make your team better. And him complaining about it, and there's part of me that looks at it and I think people feel that Seattle's way more uncomfortable with this than they actually are. I'm sure that they're not pleased. I don't think Pete Carroll's sitting there working like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next with Russ? And we can't go on like this. I don't think anybody there feels like that.
I don't either. And why would they? I mean, why would they at this point? Until Russ doesn't actually show up to work, then there's nothing to be concerned about. And this is what drives me crazy, Danny, when Florio keeps making this comparison between the Texans and Seahawks. I mean, am I not being loud enough when I'm saying, like, I covered both of these organizations firsthand, and I know the difference between these two? Because I'm tired of people that are making this comparison. Oh, I can't believe that they're going to – I saw Warren Sharp do this too. The people that I actually respect football-wise that are saying, well, can you believe that these teams are going the lengths that they're going to alienate their quarterback? And I'm saying to myself, this team's been consistently successful for like a decade. They have given around Russ everything that they possibly can. It has not worked perfectly. They have not been back to a Super Bowl, but they went to back-to-back Super Bowls, and they have not found themselves in the cavern of death like the Atlanta Falcons found themselves in. You know, like, how many of these teams that have made it to Super Bowls we just never hear from again? Like, it happens. And the Falcons are the example I point to the most, because that offense that year was out of this world good. They just vanished off the face of the earth. This team's been consistent throughout, and we're making comparisons to an organization that allowed a team chaplain to become the executive vice president. That's just ludicrous.
Is it simply the commonality that it's a franchise quarterback that gets unhappy? And the assumption is, if you've got a player of that caliber that gets unhappy, it's your fault?
I think so. And, you know, this was a conversation, Danny, and maybe we can do it in greater detail tomorrow, that I was having with Bump on, I believe it was on Friday. For a lot of organizations, I think that the idea of prioritizing winning over keeping your superstar players happy is probably a myth, because you do want to maintain relevance. And to stay relevant for a lot of teams, and across all sports, not specifically the NFL, but in basketball, it's probably more important, at least the Rockets tried to make it happen, for a team like the Rockets to try and make James Harden as happy as they possibly can to keep him for as long as they possibly can, right? And with all the teams that have brought in LeBron as well, you want to make sure that he stays. Because once he leaves, your team just becomes different as far as actual overall relevance. I do think that that's coming to the NFL, but I just find this circumstance to be completely different than the one with the losing football team that's arguably been the biggest mess in sports history over the last 10 years or so.
I agree with you about that idea that the sports are different. I do wonder how this will end up playing out, because the NFL is different than the NBA in that it takes one superstar in the NBA to dramatically change the caliber of a team. You can make a team relevant or irrelevant based on the presence of one player. Maybe that's true when it comes to quarterbacks, but there are a lot of good quarterbacks who have wallowed in mediocrity. Like, there are a lot of good quarterbacks, maybe not great ones, who have been around. Matthew Stafford's a great example. Like, that guy's been, I think he's probably better than his overall career record as a starting quarterback because he's been in Detroit. That it's not the same as in the NBA, where you've got four or five guys, which no matter which team they go to, that team is going to end up being a relevant contender within a year or two of that player's arrival.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the same thing is true in the NFL.
Really? Like, what about the top 6-7 quarterbacks in the game? Because Stafford, I think, is different. I think that we try to make Stafford in this conversation that he's not in. Like, I think Matt Stafford is a perhaps more popular version of Sam Bradford, just given the trajectories of both of their careers.
I would agree with that. I think there's two or three guys that are capable of team they go to, that team automatically becomes, hey, they're going to make it every... Drew Brees has missed the playoffs before. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers has missed the playoffs before. It's not as easy. It's not as extendable to say. Russell Wilson could decide, like, one of the possible outcomes here is he could decide he does want to play somewhere else and he gets sent somewhere else, and he ends up being kind of on a middling team that occasionally makes the playoffs, much like the Lions did with Matthew Stafford. I think that's a very possible outcome, because one player doesn't make as big a difference in the NFL, even when it's a quarterback, as one superstar makes in the NBA.
That's true, but I would say, you know, even here, if you do look at yourself in the mirror, without Russ, where would this team be? I don't know.
6-10.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be as catastrophic as it would be in Houston. I don't know that they win a game if they don't have Deshaun Watson. But I feel that he does bring them to a level that without him, it's different. And I think other organizations that haven't had a long history of success are probably going to, in the near future, say to themselves, you know what? It's going to be more important for us to just maintain fan interest and make sure that we have this guy. And, I mean, that's what Houston's doing right now. If they lose Watson, I feel like, as far as the entire fan base in that city, they might lose that fan base entirely.
It is Danny and Gallant. It is time for us to throw flags. We'll do that next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense.
Flag on the play.
It's that time where we wrap everything up. Tidy little bow. You ready for Cactus League games to resume? The Mariners winning their game on yesterday on a walk-off single by Julio Rodriguez. J-Rod Show driving in Jared Kelnick.
190-0. It begins now. Undefeated,
that was pretty
spring
pumped
training.
Up. Are you ready for the return of one Angel Hernandez?
Yeah, baseball needs villains. Baseball needs villains, and he's one of the best ones that there is because he is a villain diva, which is really extra saucy in this sport.
There are two specific umpires who are more terrible than all the others, like widely known to be terrible. It is Angel Hernandez and C.B. Buckner. They're awful. Just awful. To the point where it is not even an open secret. It's an open joke. This is from the Angels' spring training game over the weekend.
And the 1-1. Angel Hernandez is in midseason form.
Let's not make this game too fast, Angel.
1-1 pitch. 1-1 pitch straight down the pipe. Couldn't fastball. Not even a breaking pitch. Just doesn't even flinch. Calls it a ball. Just couldn't even be anybody. You could hear everybody. Oh, come on.
This is going to sound hot takey. I don't want Angel Hernandez in the playoffs. In the regular season, I think it adds a little extra flavor.
To have an incompetent official?
Yeah, because the regular season for baseball, let's be honest, after May, it's boring. It's boring until the All-Star break and the trades get made. Then it starts to ramp up again. So if we can have just some Enrico Palazzo alike in baseball, for those who don't know from The Naked Gun, when Frank Drebin steps in and he's being an umpire and he's just like unbelievably terrible as he's trying to save the queen from an assassination by then Reggie Jackson. I feel like you need umpires like this in baseball. Just really bad ones that we can laugh at or get angry at, because what else creates outrage over the course of an 162-game season for us?
I agree with you with one provision. There needs to be a blow-up at some point in the game. If you have a bad home plate umpire who is making bad calls, at some point somebody needs to get run by him. Otherwise, you're just sitting there and it feels like there's no comeuppance. Like, you just have to sit through awfulness and it goes entirely unpunished and unnoticed. Like, they can't just accept it all. Like, there has to... Somebody needs to... Oh, you're just terrible. Somebody needs to get run.
We got some breaking news. This is from Adam Schefter. The Arizona Cardinals are giving J.J. Watt a 2-year, $31 million deal, $23 million guaranteed per source. So the NFC West just got a little more dangerous. That's a team that already has Chandler Jones. What do you think, Danny? You're making a face.
I think J.J. Watt's broken down, and that's a lot of money for him.
I would tend to agree, but...
That's $15 million per year. What, $15.5 million over 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude, that's a lot of money. Is he better than Calais Campbell was there? I don't think he's as good as Calais Campbell was when Campbell was there.
See, that's the tricky one, because he was on a really bad defense, and some people from Houston will tell you that he actually played well last year, and that might need to be a conversation that I have with somebody to try to get a real gauge for just how good this guy is at this point in time. Only 5 sacks last year. That was one of the worst defenses in the NFL.
Yeah. I know he was a defensive, a cornerstone piece. I just don't think he's that dude anymore, and that's expensive.
It's a lot of money.
Also, so much for all of the people that have been reading into his Peloton bio that said, like, Green Bay, what was it, Buffalo, and somewhere else. He's been just toying with everybody if he's going to end up in Arizona.
Well, I don't know whose bio they were reading, but he tweeted out that he doesn't even have a Peloton bike.
Yeah.
He said, I don't have a bike. Stop.
He just tweeted a picture of him in a weight room, and it says, source, me, and he's got a hard-o look on his face with an Arizona Cardinals t-shirt on. And it looks like that is, that's not Photoshop. This is real. So we can confirm straight from J.J. Watt.
That doesn't change the balance of power for me.
Doesn't it make the Cardinals better, though?
And sure, it doesn't make them worse, but I don't think I think they're still number 4 in a 4-team division.
I really want to know what the defense is going to look like if it has Chandler Jones. Because, I mean, they didn't have Chandler Jones last year. And that's
an awful lot of old dudes with injury history.
True. Isaiah Simmons, though.
Isaiah Simmons is an interesting player.
Buda Baker.
Buda's great. Patrick Peterson, he's not going
to
be there. Right?
All right, top to bottom, what defense has more? Seahawks or the Cardinals?
The Seahawks are younger, man. The Seahawks are a better defense. The Cardinals have more name recognition. The Seahawks are a better defense.
Yeah. More star power. I think it's really close. I think it's really close. And I think it really depends on what you're going to get out of the secondary that you had this past season next year. I mean, there are definitely some great pieces in the linebacker core, and we'll see at defensive line. But, I mean, you might not even have Carlos Dunlap next year based off of what we're seeing from Ole Hendo. I mean, it looks like they're going to have to, at the very least, take a look at his contract and perhaps, you know, trim that a bit.
That's quite a bit of money. But Carlos Dunlap was available for anybody to trade for, and the best they got was a fifth-round pick and B.J. Finney.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair. I'm surprised.
Do you like it? Do you think they're improved? Like, do you see
the
that
Cardinals?
As, yeah.
Yeah, I don't, but again, it's like how much? I'm with you in that, but they are better. I think they are definitively better with someone like J.J. Watt aboard, because I feel that is another piece that they have on the front. That's going to be really difficult for most offensive lines to deal with. And if we're talking about a division that already was going to give the Seahawks a headache this year with the return of DeForest Buckner and Nick Bosa this coming season in San Francisco, and then, of course, what you have with the Rams and Aaron Donald, this is now even more a reason for Russell Wilson to perhaps be the squeaky wheel.
See, I think that the Rams' addition to Stafford is much more worrisome for Seattle than the Cardinals getting J.J. Watt.
I would agree with you there, because it's the quarterback and the Rams own you, as it is. And this, is, I think, makes the matchup a little bit more tilted in their favor.
All right, you got a quick flag?
You know what? I will give the Cardinals a flag for having the stones to do a move like this. Does this make them significantly better? I think a lot of the concerns you raised right now, Danny, are fair, but that pass rush is definitely a problem if it has both J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones.
That's going to do it for us. Want to thank Brock Heward for joining us for Blue 42, the professor for our morning drive, Maura Dooley for keeping everything on the straight and narrow, and maintaining calm in the pocket amidst a changing audio system. He is Paul Gallant, and he might spend the next hour with his undies bunched, it sounds like, over J.J. Watt chasing Russell Wilson around.
Stop.
Yeah.
He's Danny O'Neill, and he's got a puppy to take care of because it's barking nonstop like a guard dog. Woof, woof. Guess what? Guard against that bad take that you just had. Up next, okay, let's just throw this question out there. Whose defense is better, the Cardinals or the Seahawks, after the J.J. Watt move? I'm Paul Gallant. It's more me next.